Gerard Mayo. That was, I believe, on Thursday. Talking about, well, don't want to make excuses. Just want to be transparent. Whenever anyone says, I don't want to make an excuse, I just want to be transparent, an excuse is coming. that's what's happening there. And that's what you heard. They didn't have a full week. Neither did the Jets. But they do have extra time now for the San Francisco 49ers. Here for more on that from NBC Sports Boston. You can see him pregame, postgame, and at halftime. Mr. Tommy Curran joins the show. Hello, Tommy. How you doing?
Hello, Christian. How's everything on this Sunday?
Everything's very good. Say hi to Mego. Say hi to Shime.
Don't boss me around.
Okay, fine. Don't say hi to him. I don't care. What do I care? Let's go ahead and start with this game here today. We haven't seen the Patriots get a lot of love nationally here in this one. Certainly not from Vegas. Certainly not from prognosticators here. Not a lot of people picking them in this one. The extra time, and obviously you just heard Mayo talking about the short week. With some extra time here and extra time to kind of fix what was wrong and maybe get this offense on some kind of different track. I don't know if it's going to be successful, but a different track from what it was on last week, Tommy. Do you think that can play a factor here today?
Yeah, it should help with the communication and the number of breakdowns. It should help in terms of the intensity that I think that they lacked against the Jets and the tackling, which was embarrassingly bad on the short week. It should help in that, you know, you do lose Juwan Bentley on a short week, and I don't think that was very helpful. But it's still not going to help because their roster is that much less impressive than San Francisco's, regardless of the injuries that San Francisco has. And it looks like Debo's coming back and George Kittle will be back. And that's a very pissed off team. So will the product the Patriots put on the field be a better representation of them than the Jets game where they lost 24-3 and it felt like 41-1? Hopefully.
Tom, with that vote of confidence there, that we're going to see a product that's a little bit better. What do you think is holding back the Patriots from finding a balanced kind of attack on offense? You saw them very committed to the run game in the first two games, and it worked really well for the most part. And then Alex Van Pelt's game plan, at least to start in that Thursday night game, all of a sudden veers very strongly towards a passing game. And then they try to kind of go back to the run, but it's a little late because they're in a hole. What is the biggest roadblock to them trying to figure out their offensive identity and the balance there?
First down, to boil it down to one particular thing, it's productivity on first down. And if you can't get yourself into second and six or second and five frequently, and you're in second and eight, second and nine, well, then teams know you have to generally throw. I don't know why teams, and I'm sure that every single fan has said this themselves, why do teams hand off so much on second and eight, nine, and 11? But they do. But it's that inability on first down to get enough positive yards to put yourself in a situation where it's third manageable. And we saw that against the Jets, and we've seen that in other games. I don't blame them one iota for trying to change their game plan a bit against the Jets. Because at some point, you play plenty of hoop, Mego, the coach on the sideline is going to yell to his players, make him go left. So the Patriots could run the ball. At some point, teams were going to take that away from them. The Patriots.
Is that Jaylen Brown out there?
You're right. It was incumbent upon them to get DeMario Douglas involved, and I applaud the effort to do so. It didn't work. But they also had no ability to protect Jacoby Brissett. I don't think it would have looked any differently if they started handing the ball off. But to me, it's totally linked up with they don't have good enough players on the offensive line right now. They're trying to make chicken salad out of chicken poop, and there's going to be days where it just doesn't work.
Tom, it feels like I will always ask these Drake May related questions, but I feel the necessity to. I think earlier this week, I don't want to misrepresent what you said, but I think when you were on with Jones and Keefe earlier this week, you said it's not so much about them playing Drake May behind like and worrying about him getting injured, but it's more about him looking like a bobo, was I believe the word you used, correct?
No, I think it was boob.
Oh, boob.
Same four letters, different order.
My apologies, boob. So my
dyslexic
question
there.
My question for you is quarterbacks at some point throughout their careers always look like boobs, but the good quarterbacks are the ones who learn from those mistakes and don't repeat them. And so for me, I'm curious if you think it's really about Drake May looking like a boob, or if it's more so about Van Pelt and Elliott Wolf looking like boobs when he gets on the field for bad play calling, bad support around him, etc.
I think that's a stretch. I mean, look at Bryce Young, look at Sam Darnold, look at the litany of Mac Jones. Look at the litany of players we can point to, Chris, who were put on the field in a position where they didn't have the equipment mentally to process what they were looking at the line of scrimmage, and they got worse and worse and worse, and then their confidence was shot. I truly think that the Patriots drafted Drake May and started talking about it at the combine and the owners' meetings, explaining that he had a very high ceiling but a low floor. They're trying to bring the floor up gradually. I don't think anybody's protecting themselves. If they wanted to protect themselves, they wouldn't have taken Drake May. They would have done other things to try and make the team better. Once you bring that player in, you have to make him as good as you can. I just think they're more concerned. People keep saying, well, you can't put him out there behind this line, feeling as if he's going to take. Yeah. I mean, Andrew Callahan said, put Joe Milton in instead of Drake May. Like, everybody's cannon fodder, but the third overall pick. That'll go over big. But, you know, to me, it's more, we don't want to put him out there because we're trying to teach him some structure. And if it is a jailbreak every time he drops back and we see him losing confidence, then it's going to be a Sam Darnold situation or even a Tua situation where they put him in and then had to bring him back out and put Ryan Fitzpatrick in. That's the totality of, I think, their plan. It's not, I think, to guard against anybody saying, you guys don't know what you're doing.
On Quick Slants this week, you had a poll question that I really liked, Tommy, about which one of the teams that we've seen in the three different performances is most likely the real team. Which one's closest to the real team? The team that you saw against the Bengals, the Seahawks, or the Jets. Which one of those three teams do you think we see today?
Oh, boy. I think it's a good question. And I will give you this caveat, Christian. What they can't control is the mood that the other team enters the game with. And I think that the Bengals entered the game with one mood, and the Seahawks and the Jets both entered with different moods, and San Francisco is going to be in a terrible mood when they take the field today against the Patriots. I think the Patriots are more represented by that second game of the season against Seattle. They get in against a smart quarterback. They're going to be able to be exploited a little bit defensively, because I don't think that their pass rush is very good right now. Not impressive. And I think the Bentley loss is going to be big and put teams in more favorable second and third down situations. But they have to figure out a way to get off the field on third down, which they failed to do really the last two games. So to me, it's probably a little bit more of the second game of the season. I don't think the Jets game was representative. Do you guys?
I'd certainly hope not. I mean, listen, it was a short week, and I think a lot of people watched that game and thought, wow, this is what they look like when they're at their worst. I mean, but a lot of people thought this is what the entire season would look like. So the only reason I'd say no to that is because of the previous two games where they were competitive. But
right.
I think coming into the season, that's what a lot of people expected to see all year.
Exactly, and I think that's what kind of changed the conversation so drastically, is they played well in the first two games. Or surprisingly well, so that when they fell on their face, it was injurious to people's ideas of what they had been watching. People like, holy crap, I thought that they were good, and now they suck. Well, this pisses me off. And I think that is kind of an element of being a fan, too, and watching things. Well, I'm sitting here thinking it's a good team, and now they suck. Well, here we go. I'm pissed. So I think there's a little of that that enters into it as well.
Tom, do you think that there is anybody on the Patriots personnel who they can use to attack the Niners secondary? Like, is there anybody that they can use as any kind of deep offensive weapon other than yelling, like, go long, Tyquan, just keep going down there, just keep running?
That's what sucks, is they've had so few opportunities to try it because of the time that Jacoby's been afforded. I think, what was it, the Jets game? Excuse me, what was it, the Seattle game? They threw deep at the beginning of the second half to Tyquan, incomplete. They had a couple of pass interferences to Tyquan, but he's a fifth-round pick, not a second-round pick, which Bill Belichick made him. As every single person who was evaluating the draft said prior to the draft, it looks like he's a fifth-round pick. And well, the Patriots have him for a second. He's running down the field, making no impact at all over the course of three seasons. So DeMario's not a good down-the-field target because he's so small, so you'd have to game something up down the field, which Josh McDaniels was really good at, by the way. He used to be able to game things up where even if they didn't have the great speed, he would have laid the foundation for them to run a play where somebody just wound up naked and alone with nobody near them because of the scheming. So I think it's on Van Pelt when he's undermanned offensively to come up with schemes that free guys down the field for him. So nobody is the long and short answer.
Tom, there's been a bit of discourse this week about Christian Gonzalez because, like, you see the PFF numbers and they don't have him rated very highly, actually pretty poorly. But when I watch the games, like, I feel like Christian Gonzalez makes an impact. You look at those, you know, he's up against Garrett Wilson and he holds Garrett Wilson to five catches for 46 yards, whatever the number was. What is your evaluation so far of Christian Gonzalez's season?
I would say fine, Shime. I would say he's fine. Very good week one, good week two, although all of them got a little tuned up by the Seattle receivers. And then I didn't even mind when he went for the pick on the goal line against Garrett Wilson because
he needed a play.
Yeah, it needed a play. Could have been a game-changing play if it turned into a pick six, and they were just taking it on the chin at that point.
Sure.
I just think he's a really good player, Shime. I just really think he has all the elements that are involved that you want in a long, tall corner who can cover a variety of skill sets. So the week-to-week evaluation of is he good, is he bad, is he a bust, is he great, he's just always going to be a plus-plus corner, and that's not going to change based on 1 week or the next to me or PFF grades. And I do like PFF. I think it's a very useful tool, but Darrell Revis was allegedly crappy during the first 5 or 6 weeks he was here in New England. And we had myriad conversations in 2014 about this guy's overrated. He's not worth it. He was worth it.
Yes, he certainly was. Yeah. All right. Before we let you go here, Tommy, final score.
We got 31-13.
31-13. Yes. Patriots. Wow, yeah, big win for the Patriots this week. That's interesting.
Well, it's a real eye-opener. I mean, San Francisco, Shanahan's on the hot seat after this one.
Yeah.
So 31-13, San Francisco will win. It's just the second or third best team in football against the 28th, 29th, or 30th best team.
All right, we'll leave it right there. Tommy Curran, thanks so much. We'll be watching on NBC Sports Boston today, pre-post and at halftime. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Christian. See you.
Right. Bye,
guys.
Tommy Curran,
Tom,
joining us here on WEEI Football Sunday. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We got some space for you here in the next segment. If you'd like to jump in before we get to inactives at 11:30, we'll look around the league, see who's hurt, see who's out. Already some names starting to trickle out. Joe Mixon not playing for the Texans today. He headlines a long list already. We'll get the full list at 11:30. Won't get the Patriots until later on after the show's over, so you're going to have to get the Patriots inactive somewhere else. But all that's coming up right after Chris Scheim tells you what's trending. So that was Rap Sheet's little rap sheet bomb, I guess. Seems like Sunday right around this time, he's always got some little Patriots detail, doesn't he? It's always something.
What was the detail there?
That the still weeks away from Drake May.
Boo.
I mean, that's what he said. Like, they haven't really ramped him up yet. They're not ready. They're not prepared to make him the starter. That is still probably a couple of weeks away before we see that. Now, if that's true, weeks, I mean, I consider this the week, and then next week is week five, so if it's multiple weeks, then that means his big, the perfect start where he's home and he gets the home crowd, and they're going against Miami, and Miami doesn't have a quarterback, and the one team they could probably beat, like, if that's multiple weeks, that means it's not this week against Miami at home.
No, it's not. And it's probably not the following week against Houston at home because you're not going to play him against C.J. Stroud. And then you go to London, and then you come back home for the Jets, who just whooped your ass on Thursday Night Football, so do you really want to start him?
And then you can't go on the road and play him against Tennessee or Chicago, and then you can't. Well, then it's the Rams.
Whoa, 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 whoa. And you just have a million excuses all the time.
Wasn't
it just an hour and a half ago that Shine was saying every week is the perfect time for Drake May to start?
Trust me.
You're talking about what the team's going to say.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. That's what I'm saying.
I'm speaking like I'm the team. Right. From me, I would say start him this week, start him next week.
You have to use a different voice to clarify.
Use your Robin Glazer voice.
Yeah.
I don't know that I have one. I could use like the they're not gonna start him next week though against Miami or against Houston. Is that better? Is that a better voice?
That sounded like Jackson.
Annoying. Yeah, there you go. It's good.
Isn't that, it sounded exactly like how Jackson talked. Yeah. When I first met Jackson, I thought English was a second language.
He's like, where are you from?
He goes, Hyde Park. I was like, what?
And he looks like Kris Kringle from those old like animated Christmas movies where they're like claymation.
UConn Cornelius.
Yes, UConn Cornelius. Exactly.
I love Jack. Jackson's been doing a lot of work in the afternoon. He's been doing very well. Him
good.
Is everybody. I'm very impressed with all the producers we worked with so far. But yeah, first time I met Jackson, I did not know. I was like, I wonder what his native language is.
I also know about Jackson. There's not a food drop that he dislikes.
Yeah, that too. Anyways, that's who I thought you were doing an impression of. What was that impression?
I don't know. Just a random voice I tried
just
to
do. Just a random
nasally voice.
Some kind of other voice. All right.
Annoying nasally voice. Sounds, because that's what I feel like.
Sounds a lot like Jackson, but okay. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll have your inactives here in about 5 minutes. But first, let's go to the phones. Jay is in North Carolina with a thought on running backs. Go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, good morning, folks. The Lunch Pail Crew.
That's
working
right.
On a Sunday. Congratulations.
Always. Bet your
folks.
Ass.
Hey, look, I wondered what the life expectancy of the NFL positions are. Now, I know Tom Brady is a rarity, but he has an offensive line protecting him. And I guess they go for about 6, maybe 7 years. But the running backs, what is their life expectancy? Taking a beating with these guys that are 6'7", 350 pounds. What is your take on that?
Well, I can give you the numbers here. According to Statista, the average NFL career length by position is as follows. Let's see here. I'm looking at kickers and punters usually have about just under a 5-year career. Quarterbacks, 4.5. Offensive linemen, 3 2/3. Defensive linemen, 3 1/4. Linebackers, 3. Corners, 3. Tight ends, 2.85. Wide receivers, 2.81. And then all the way down at the bottom, running backs at 2.5 years. That is the average lifespan.
It's tough.
Lifespan, sort of a dark way of putting it, but a career span for your average running back. And it's not surprising either. Lately, I feel like the league's just been cycling through running backs like they're
once
nothing.
You hit 30, you're nothing anymore.
Basically,
a lot
yeah.
of the time at running back, unfortunately.
Feels very familiar to me, actually.
Yeah, right? I resonate very strongly with that.
There you go. All right, let's go to Dave in Connecticut, who has a thought on my take, I guess. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, how's it going?
Hey, Dave.
I just wanted to kind of get a clarification. I think, was it Fitzy that said the Patriots were going to outright win today?
That was me. That was Arcand.
Oh, Arcand. Okay, I just want to know, how do you think that they're going to stop the pass rush with that offensive line that's the worst in the league? I don't understand how you could even... Did you actually bet on that game? Because it's a 10-point spread, so you must have a lot of money on this game.
I will not. Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, so we're not going to discuss that on the air. I may or may not have made a wager on that game.
Patriots 4-1 to win.
Yeah, that too. I'm not. Listen, I may have done a little sprinkle. May have been some sprinklage.
Hey, I never knocked the hustle.
Either way, the pass rush is the question he asked. And yes, I agree. San Francisco does have a very strong pass rush, and I do think that if they try and drop back and play a normal, pass game, that they're going to have trouble with that. But I also think that this is a team that at the beginning of the year, Alex Van Pelt said, I want to be the best screen team in the league. I want this to be the best screen team in the league. So far, they have not been.
No, they stink.
Not by a lot.
Oh,
they're not
God,
good
they're
with
so
the screens.
Bad.
But they also don't try them that much, and they have had some success. That screen, the Hunter Henry, was a great play.
Yeah.
They got 35-4. It was one of the biggest plays of the year that they've had so far. They've gotten Pop Douglas involved in the offense as of last week. I think they can continue to do that. I think they can feed Stevenson some more, and I think that they can use that aggressive pass rush against itself. Just like in general, I think you can use San Francisco and their desperation a little bit against themselves here. You're not some strong offensive team. You're not a team that's going to go out there and confuse them. You're a team that can maybe try and take advantage of their aggression and use it against them, which is I think what you do in the screen game and just get those get those guys to come up and after you run the ball enough to play action or two something. I don't know. I mean, it's not like they've been doing that this year either. But I do think that it's a possibility. I don't think the pass rush will be the biggest issue for them. It'll be a bigger issue for them if the Niners stop the run.
I think what's kind of frustrating through three games with this offense is that everything becomes tunnel vision for whatever's working at that time.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of imagination, and I don't know if that's coming from Van Pelt or if that's just Jacoby Brissett being under so much pressure that once he trusts somebody in the situation he's in, he's going to go back to him. But you saw it with, hey, of course, the run was working against Cincinnati with Ramondre Stevenson. No reason to go away from that. But then it was like, okay, for a whole half, now I'm just going to look at Antonio Gibson. And then for a whole half, I'm just looking at Hunter Henry. I would love to see DeMario Douglas and Jalen Polk in the screen game get much more involved if they're going to be trying to get more traction in the passing game. I think that that's a way to do it. And I'm surprised that we haven't seen more of it from Van Pelt. But it's just frustrating to like watch and be like, this is so predictable. I just want to know whether that's coming from the playbook or whether that is just the more of Jacoby being tunnel vision on the guy he trusts.
I would suggest that it's a lot, majority of it is to do with the playbook, and it's actually Alex Van Pelt. Like last week I went back, I charted it, like they only ran, let's see, with Jacoby Brissett on the field, they ran motion. And this is like the easiest cheat code in all of football right now. Good teams run motion. For reference, the Minnesota Vikings, just in last week's game, ran motion on 75% of their plays. In my opinion, dynamic motion, when a guy's moving at the snap, they did it at 41%. With Jacoby Brissett on the field last week for the New England Patriots, they ran motion 58% of the time, but only dynamic motion about 25% of the time.
Yeah, but you got guys like not even sure where they're supposed to line up at times last week.
Sure, but I think in general, though, it's just Alex Van Pelt's offense is very vanilla. There's no bells and whistles. Like
it's missionary.
Offense. With the lights off. Like, it's bad. And
under the covers.
Yeah. As Tom pointed out, like, Josh McDaniels had it where he would set a foundation for a play he could exploit later. Alex Van Pelt does not do that. He just calls it by his book, and it's very vanilla and very simple, and it is very uninspiring.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I don't think anyone's going to mistake the Patriots' missionary offense for what the Niners are doing. The reverse pile driver over there in San Francisco.
Jesus.
God. I'm just saying. Oh, no one's gonna do it Sunday morning. I apologize, everybody. But you know, like that's
they got swings over there.
You started it, Meg. Don't look at me.
They're in the dungeon.
Yeah, this is probably gonna be one
whips
of those
and chains.
Games where
strobe light going.
Ooh, nice. A lot of latex.
Oh yeah. It's gonna be real funky down there. Anyway, that's happening in San Francisco.
Oh,
today
my father in law just texted me.
Gross. The lingering question, according to Mike Reese, on how close Drake May, 30% of the first team reps in practice. This is from Reese this morning. Mayo reiterated this week the team has no plans to bring a veteran quarterback in, which reinforces what Elliot Wolf would be comfortable turning to May now in the event of an injury to Jacoby Brissett. Is that something? I mean, I know that Callahan talked about Joe Milton playing,
which he's walked back.
I know,
to be clear.
I know. He has.
I want to. Callahan's my friend, and he put that out there, and then he quickly tried to pull it back in, but it was already out of the bag.
Yeah, it's tough to put the egg back in the shell once you say something like that, as I've done many times, so I know what that's like, and it's no big deal. Honestly, really, it's not that crazy to think that the way that they're treating Drake May implies that they'd be willing to go an extra step to keep him off the field if they didn't think he was ready. And that extra step would be Joe Milton, right? Like, the way that they're treating him right now, it doesn't seem that far-fetched.
It would be. I just think that if that was the way that they were actually going to approach it, that you would see somebody, they would be bringing in a different veteran quarterback.
They would have kept Bailey Zappi.
Right.
They would have kept Bailey Zappi, or they would have brought
signed
in
Tannehill or
something.
Yeah, right,
exactly.
Because you could have put Joe Milton on the practice squad. You could have easily put Milton would have easily gotten to your practice squad. You could have kept Bailey Zappi on the roster if that was really how they wanted to approach it. If they didn't want Drake May to hit the field at all this year, that's how you would do it. You would not send a different rookie quarterback out there that isn't your number three overall pick. That would be insane.
And I also think that if you went through the process of bringing in another veteran quarterback or anything like that and really bumping him down to that third line spot because you're like, you're so far from ready and we don't want to put you in this situation, in a way, that's kind of the bad mind game to play with your rookie quarterback.
Yeah, you're destroying
as well.
His confidence.
You're saying, like, there's just no chance. What is his motivation week to week? It's just to get better being on show team. I think that that is a tough way for rookie quarterbacks to live. Now, I think it's good to kind of dangle the carrot in front of him and say, hey, we really like what you're doing. That's why we're continuing to give you these 30% snaps. But we need to see more growth. We need to see more, Drake. And there will be a time that comes for you, but it's not this week and it's probably not next week. But keep dangling the carrot. My question would be, though,
how does he show the growth? Like, if you're only getting 30% of the team snap, like, how do you continue? How do you show growth if you're only getting 3 out of every 10?
Well, 30% is still more than most backup quarterbacks would be getting in their preparation.
Sure, but again, it's such a small
other
sample.
Other backups, they're not waiting for them to come in. Like, that's not the goal, is to have the backup come in and play, like, anywhere else in the league right now.
No,
you know, no one else is to have their season planned out that way.
I don't disagree, but if you're dangling a carrot saying you need to show us more, you need to show us more. Like, what else? What? How much can
I
show
agree.
You?
So I agree with you.
Some of it is him working with the quarterback coaches outside of practice. And I know people hate hearing about the virtual reality headset rep stuff.
Virtual
and all
reps,
of that.
Love those.
But talking to David Andrews this week, they seem to think that it's been a really big progression from him, even from week one, saying like, he had to take things pretty slowly, and now they're able to throw these different, you know, twists into situational stuff. It's not just like, hey, you know, have your feet under you and your helmet fastened, right?
It's just, it's hard for me to buy into that when I watch the current starting quarterback not do any of those things. Like, I watch on Thursday Night Football, Jacoby Brissett. Everybody on the planet can see there's four guys on the right side of the offensive line. He doesn't change the protection. He doesn't call out. He doesn't cancel the play. He does none of those things. And he just allows four pass rushers to come at him with two offensive line to defend him, which is why a lot of the times, like, I don't blame how bad the offensive line has been all on the offensive line. I think a lot of it is Jacoby Brissett and his inability to change things at the line of scrimmage, to see anything at the line of scrimmage. And so it's hard for me to be like, okay, the Patriots are really going to hold Drake May to that when they aren't even holding the current guy they have at quarterback to that.
All right. Part of that, I think, is also, just really quick, Arcan, is if you want to see that growth in real time and you think that he can get it through games and being able to diagnose some of the more complicated defenses that these teams are rolling out against young quarterbacks and young quarterbacks against the league are struggling with. So to roll him out and basically believe that he can learn that on the fly week to week, not every quarterback can. And I don't think that necessarily means that then they're like a doomed quarterback. They're not good enough for the league.
Sure. Yeah. I see Caleb Williams come out and he's immediately changing protections. He's checking out of plays. Like, does everything look great? No, but I know he's seeing things and understanding things and processing them and learning from them. Whereas Drake May is sitting on the sideline and I'm watching Jacoby Brissett do none of those things anyways. So it's like, yeah, Drake would be better off learning with a clipboard. Learning from who? Because Jacoby Brissett isn't doing what Drake May should be doing when he's out there. So who's he learning from?
Ben McAdoo.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
There you go. Hey, Ben McAdoo was good with Eli Manning 10 years ago.
For a moment.
Actives and inactives are out for the 1 o'clock slate of games. We don't have anything for the Patriots yet, but I can tell you that the Malik Willis era is over. Jordan Love starting for the Green Bay Packers. The Saints will have Alvin Kamara and Chris Olave. Both were questionable this week. Bears will have Keenan Allen for the first time this year, right? Or did he play in the first week?
He played in the first week.
That's right. So, yeah, he missed the last two games. He'll be back out there for Caleb Williams, who you were just talking about. Those guys all active. Some inactives for you. Jair Alexander. Thank you very much, Jair Alexander. Thank you, Jacob. Is out for the Packers. The Jets will be without C.J. Mosley. And as we already told you, the Texans running back Joe Mixon is going to be out. The Houston Texans taking on Jacksonville. And I'll tell you what, Houston without a run game last week didn't look great. You know, they looked like a team that was, as much as I like C.J. Stroud, that run game, I think, is a real catalyst for them. I kind of like Jacksonville today, even though they're 0-3 and look like ass. We'll get to all that when we do our predictions a little bit later on. Anything jump out to you with these inactives that we see so far? Not a lot of big names, but, you know, some guys there.
I'm kind of surprised that they're playing Jordan Love.
Me too.
I am surprised they're rushing him back. Malik Willis has been good the last 2 weeks. On third down, has been insanely efficient, and I think a lot of that is due to Matt LaFleur being a really good offensive coach, and I think just bringing Malik Willis against a Brian Flores defense that has been lighting it up would have been a bit of a curveball that I think would have gone in the favor of the Green Bay Packers and given Love more time to recover. But then again, you go with the better quarterback here, and Jordan Love's coming back right now.
Love's going to be wearing a knee brace today.
Yeah, I don't love that. If you're going up against Brian Flores, who blitzes more than anybody on the planet and does it in a creative fashion with a guy who can't move because of a knee brace, that spells disaster to me.
I would have given him another week.
I agree.
I'm surprised to see him out there, too. I know they want him to get back out there. I know he's wanted to get back out. It was just a sprain, too. It's not like he tore anything, right? It was an MCL
Correct.
Sprain, I want to say. So, like, 3 weeks wouldn't be a record to come back from that. It's just, you know, if you have to wear a brace, and you're out there getting chased around by a Flores
Take
defense, as you said. That's that's going to be a tough one there. Anyway, there you go. Those are your inactives so far for the week. We'll let you know if any other big prominent names pop up. But so far, doesn't seem like there's any big surprises coming your way, at least in the 1 o'clock slate for any of these games. We will get to Wiggy's Keys, which is I'm excited to hear what Wiggy's Keys to Victory are for the Patriots this week. I don't think he's picking the Patriots, but we'll let you know what they can do to win, according to Coach Wiggy, right after this. That's how it ended on Thursday. Patriots getting blown out by the Jets. It was the first home game for Aaron Rodgers since that bad injury last year. And a short week for the Patriots, short week for the Jets, too. It didn't seem to bother them as much. They've had a long time to prepare for the San Francisco 49ers, who they play today at 4 o'clock. Is when your kickoff is from, what's the name of that? What's the name of the stadium they play in? What's the Niners stadium?
It's not Levi Stadium.
Is it Levi Stadium?
Is it? Yeah. They used to play at Candlestick. Now they play at Levi, right?
I think that's right.
Yeah, they play at Levi's.
Yep. Levi's Stadium.
Yep.
That is correct. So, anyway.
Classic jeans.
With that in mind, let's get to the keys to the game as told to us by one Jermaine Wiggins.
Yo, what up? Coach Wiggy here. My three keys to the game, simple. Number one, you have to get things going in the passing game. And I'm not talking about checkdowns. I'm talking about you got to average more than 8 yards a pass if you want to beat the 49ers.
Okay, number one, get the pass game going. I was expecting to hear run game. Usually the first key has something to do with the run game or protecting the quarterback. He's saying get the ball out and not just checkdowns. Go down the field. Is Jacoby Brissett going to have enough time to go down the field? Are these receivers going to have enough time to run a route that could get down the field and get open down the field? Or is that even something you can count on today?
8 yards a pass feels really high.
Yeah, that's like, not a big number to ask for, but it still
seems
monumental.
Very high for Jacoby Brissett compared to what we've seen so far. Like, I believe in week one, when their offense probably looked the most functional, he was only averaging 5 yards per attempt. So 8 yards would be a pretty dramatic growth.
Brissett averaged 5 yards per pass against the Bengals, 5.5 against Seattle, 5.4 against the Jets. He's not eclipsed 5.5 yards per attempt yet.
Yeah, I don't expect him to in this game
and
either.
Who's the deep threat? Or who's the intermediate threat?
You know, you got all sorts of deep threats. Just send anybody down the field. They're a threat. They're not going to get the ball, but they'll be very threatening. Listen, I think that getting the pass game going is important. I disagree that the checkdowns is not the way to do it. Checkdowns is the only way to do it with this pass rush and with what you have. You know,
she says. Yeah. I like it.
Hey, you have a running back in Ramondre Stevenson who's been breaking a ton of tackles so far to start the year. He needs to hold on to the ball, obviously.
Yes,
but I say get him involved in the screen game. Keep doing what you were doing with Pop Douglas. Hunter Henry has shown that he can get open pretty quickly.
Let's see some more spins from Gibson.
Let's see it. You know, let's see. Let's see what you get some other guys involved here and get this offense going. Because I agree, I do think you need to pass the ball today. I just disagree that it has to be 8 yards per game. There's no way that's happening.
Yeah, there's actually only like 7 or 8 quarterbacks in the league who have an average air yards per attempt over 8, and that's Murray, Mayfield, Burrow, Purdy, Daniels, Darnold, Carr, and Allen.
Okay. Yeah, I'm thinking they're probably not going to join
Darnold's
that group.
Cooking.
Wouldn't think he'd be.
Cooking.
If he was going to join the group, he's not going to join it today. So there you go. All right, here's key number two.
Number two, defensively, you got to be able to stop the run and get after them. They won't have Christian McCaffrey, so you know what they're going to try to do. They want to try to run the ball and play action. You got to get after them.
All right, can you stop the run? Obviously, without McCaffrey, that's not as daunting of a task as it would be if he was playing. Their backup running back there, Jordan Mason, has been good. Not great. He was good in the first week. He's kind of tailed off since then. They know they're going to be without McCaffrey now for a little while longer, maybe a few more months. Stopping the run, is that something you anticipate the Patriots can do today?
Absolutely. I think that that's an area of the game that they should be able to control. It was pretty miserable watching the defense whiff on tackles against the Jets. I think with a lot of rest and a lot more reps, they spent all of Monday self-scouting themselves. So I hope that they will be able to at least control that area of the game.
I watched Uche have Braylon Allen dead to rights at the backfield, not wrap him up, and Braylon Allen break for like 6 or 7 yards. If they allow that to happen again today, it is going to get ugly.
Yeah.
So yeah, they can control the run game, but they need to secure those tackles.
Mason, week one against the Jets, 147 yards on 28 carries. That's 5.3 yards per carry.
He was awesome.
5 yards per carry against the Vikings. I forgot he had a pretty good game against them too and a touchdown. Against the Rams though, 77 yards on 19 carries, 4 yards a carry, no touchdowns, and didn't make a huge impact on that game.
Pedestrian.
I thought that the Rams' running attack was a little bit stronger, which I was surprised to see, seeing as how the Niners, I feel like, up front and in the middle, are not easy to move the ball against. They got some real thumpers there in linebacker. They got some big guys up front. I do think that their secondary is vulnerable, but you got to get the ball out there somehow, and that's going to be a challenge. So, all right, let's get to key number three.
And number three, they got some key injuries on defense, so you want to be able to run the football, run it early, and run it often so you can set up your play-action game so you can hit some of those deep shots down the field. That's your boy.
All right, Wiggy, key number one was get the pass game going. Key number three is get the run game going.
Get the offense going.
You got to get the offense going.
Okay.
I think is pretty, pretty clear what he's going for there.
Clear emphasis.
The running game I'd put ahead of the pass. Like, you have to do that. I don't think that you can throw the ball a ton to set up the run and try and catch them by surprise with your run game.
No, they tried that last week.
You're
not
that kind of team, and it didn't work last week. You're right.
You just have to run the football. Be aggressive. Like, don't line up. Be stronger. When your offensive line is lining up and you're running the football, they've been pretty good this year. Like, they've been average, maybe even slightly above. But, like, when you just straight up drop back and pass, they have been horrendous. Just line up, be stronger than your opponent, and run the football.
And again, I think with the personnel that they're probably going to have to roll out there, don't be looking for the wide zone, the outside zone running schemes. Like, I get it. It's what Van Pelt wants to do. He's been flexible at times, being able to bring it back to the middle of the field. That's just where you have to go. Like, that's where you have success with the personnel that's out there. I don't think you can get as fancy and exotic as going outside when you have the tackles and guards who are probably going to be in this game.
Yeah, I hate to sound like Andy Hart, but don't they miss the fullback? They miss a James Devlin type in this offense.
Yeah, I could see that.
Andy Hart does love him some fullback play.
He loves a good neck roll and a fullback.
Yeah, that's true. I was just going to ask you something, and I forget what it is. Either way, with the Niners and their desperation, which is something that we've talked about, and the Patriots and their offense not being able to really get off the ground here, let's say it's an ugly first half. Let's say it's like a low-scoring first half, and the Niners are up, 7-0 or whatever, and the Patriots just go three and out, maybe a turnover, maybe something like that. Is there a chance you think Drake May comes in at halftime of this game?
I don't think it's totally out of the question, but I still think that it would be more closer to a garbage time just because, I'm not saying, like, you can't play him because of the safety aspect of who's on the offensive line. Mm-hmm. But I think that they probably would feel more comfortable with him being out there for just the fourth quarter than an entire second half, given who's playing tackle.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think you can rule it out, but I mean, according to what Rap Sheet says, like, there's no chance that would probably happen, really. It would really only be a garbage time performance out of Drake May, if anything at all.
Yeah. You're probably right, and I think that sucks, first of all. But
if they
also have reiterated multiple times that this is our backup, and if something happens to the starter, then the backup's going in. And if that means the starter's playing unacceptably, that's something happening to the starter, isn't it? Like, they're not going to put him out there no matter what all the time. I don't think. I mean, I don't think that was the plan. But listen, I mean, the plan seems to change and sort of morph into
fluid, whatever
they want it to be to match that question that they're answering at that particular time. So we'll see. But I think that if you see May come in and he comes in like and plays the second half, then he's the starting quarterback for the rest of the year. You can't go back after that.
No, it's the whole Mac Jones, Bailey Zappi thing from last year, where it's like, once you pull the guy, you can't go back to him. That's just, you're yo-yoing people, and it's awful for the locker room and awful for the guys that are actually playing the position. Like, once you pull him, you can't. So that's why I don't necessarily see it happening today, because you cannot go back from that decision.
And I also feel like they're all so concerned, and everybody who talks about it seems so concerned with it being the perfect conditions for him to start the year. And I don't think you're ever going to get that. Even if you go at home against the Miami Dolphins, like, who's to say he doesn't go out and have a bad game against the Dolphins? He could have a bad game against anybody. I don't think that that's necessarily going to be some super soft landing spot. But either way, what's worse, him going out and having a bad game against a good team, or him coming in at halftime, playing the game, and then getting pulled the next week? Like, what's going to be more detrimental to him in his career? I think it's the second thing by far.
Yeah, especially because when you're a bad team, there are no good situations for a young quarterback to come into. Like, that's the big thing. Is it's
true.
Like, there's never going to be, as much as I may call it a perfect situation, it's never going to be perfect because the Patriots aren't a great team.
Right. I mean, it's not just about the situation, though. It's about who he is behind the scenes. It's about his own preparation. And that's where I think it probably still is a little early in the year that for him to be going out and playing meaningful time.
Yeah, but like, if you thought that
his preparation,
if you felt that he wasn't going to be behind the scenes, that he wasn't going to be ready to play in an NFL game, why did you take him 3 overall?
I think there was probably, I mean, I don't know this. My speculation would be that's what ownership wants. And where you can't just sit around, I said this at the time, you can't sit around assuming that every next year you're going to have a pick that high to go get a quarterback.
Sure.
Most quarterbacks are found in the first. The most quarterbacks who hang around and are starters are found in the first round.
But if ownership
wanted
to,
there's Dak Prescott's out there, there's Kirk Cousins out there, but most of them are first round quarterbacks.
But if ownership stepped in and was like, yeah, draft this guy, why have they not stepped in and said, yeah, play this guy?
Because it's week 4.
But so what?
We're not even in October yet. I think that there's a little more patience to the situation than that.
But if you're
but you're drafting him not
you
wanting
can't
to start him.
Can't
the
choose,
other,
you can't just pick and choose where you jump in and don't jump in. Like you need
Why
to,
not? You own the team.
Yeah, sure, but like be a little bit more have a little bit more confidence in your decision. If you're going to step in and be like, yeah, take this guy 3 overall, then
well,
be like,
you can have confidence again, and I'm speculating here.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you say like, hey, if you feel, I'm speaking as ownership, my guys in the front office, Elliot Wolf, if you feel confident in the tools that this quarterback has and his makeup, take him at 3. But I'm going to then hand it over to you about when you and the coaching staff think that he's ready to go in.
But that's not ownership stepping in to take him at 3, though. That's you saying, yeah, if you're comfortable taking him at 3, take him at 3. But if ownership comes in and says, yeah, we need to take a quarterback, take a quarterback, then why aren't they playing the quarterback? You can't like tell the front office, take the quarterback, and then now I'm going to let the front office decide when they play the quarterback. That makes no sense. Like, you have to have consistency.
I don't necessarily agree with that. And I don't think if you look around at owners, whether they're meddling or not, that they necessarily have to play everything by the book week to week. I mean, human nature is not to be entirely consistent. People are hypocritical all the time in what they
sure.
do.
Sure.
Yeah, but I sort of agree that if they make the command that you have to pick this quarterback,
and
here,
again, I'm not saying that they did that, but I do
play.
Think that they put out a letter to the fan base, to the season ticket holders, at the end of last season saying, hey, remember last time that we had a pick this high, we got Drew Bledsoe. And that kind of sets the table for somebody who doesn't even have a job title yet at the time, and Elliot Wolf going into the draft about, you know what, probably isn't going to make everybody happy, trading back and getting
yeah, but also with Drew Bledsoe, he started right away.
But that was a persuasive statement, too. I mean, that was ownership persuading them
That's
to go
That's what I'm saying. I'm not
way.
Saying that they, like,
they can persuade
told,
them
hey,
to play
Elliot,
him too.
If you want this job, you're going to take a quarterback. But I do think that it's probably what a lot of people who own the team wanted.
And if you get curb stomped by the 49ers this week, how can you then not be like, why are we not playing our rookie quarterback? Like,
you
why
can
are we
be.
Not?
I just don't think that exercises a lot of patience. And they promise that they're going to be patient.
I don't think that patience isn't sitting a quarterback. Like, patience is putting the rookie quarterback out there and letting him learn. And is he going to make some mistakes? Yeah.
But not if they don't deem him like ready to be functional for 4 quarters of the game.
Then why did they take him and not a different quarterback at 3? Like, that's my point.
Other quarterbacks were already taken.
No, there were 4 other quarterbacks
on
the board.
Well, I'm saying they probably felt that he was still the best project. Like, we knew that they were taking a project at quarterback.
But Drake... I don't know
why everyone's pretending like this is something that is just emerging. That
Drake
like,
May isn't a project. Like, he was...
He was known as a project in the draft,
not,
and it wasn't just about
there
his
was,
footwork.
Before last year's college football season even started, he was, like, lock, stock, and barrel the second-best quarterback. In a lot of people's draft boards, he was better than Caleb Williams. Mine in particular. Like, I thought he was better than Caleb Williams.
On the Chris Scheim draft board.
Yeah,
he was
we're talking ahead. About draft boards. He's in probably... There is a part of it that he's in one of the worst situations in the league that a young rookie
but
quarterback
could be going
into.
But this project narrative is... like coming up now, like it did not come up before the draft.
It was up during the entire draft.
It was,
I mean, we talked
well, listen,
about it
he
every
was,
day.
He, compared to the other quarterbacks, were all 25 in his first year at the 3rd overall pick. I don't think.
And I'm not saying
I think
not
the truth
playing.
Somewhere in
I'm
between.
Saying I don't know why we're at a point in week 4 where it's not even October, and it's like, why doesn't ownership step in and tell him to play him now? Because it's week 4 and they got their asses kicked in Thursday Night Football just now.
That's
like,
true.
Why don't
and people
Jacoby
are getting,
Brissett can get another start, and then we'll see where it is when they have back. Back home
if
games.
They keep getting their ass kicked, though, people are going to move away from this team.
And they're going to tune them out.
They're going to tune them out. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll pick this back up on the other side with your phone calls, and Andy Hart will join the show at 1230. That's all coming up.